Good evening. My name is Jackie Wallace. I'm director of the Western College Alumni Association. And in behalf of the Board of Trustees of the Association, I would like to welcome formally Mary Del Lesueur, first artist in residence in the School of Interdisciplinary Studies Western College program. The Artist in Residence program is sponsored by the Western College Alumni Association. It recalls that Western College was the first American college or university to support an artist in residence. That artist was composer Edgar Stillman Kelly, who from 1910 to 1934 lived with his wife Jessica in the house now known as the Stillman Kelly Cottage and presently the home of Carol and Jeff Chase and their children. It is indeed fitting that the new Western should initiate an artist in residence program. Joe Pora will introduce our artist. There he is. And Joe and I both smile at the thought that in 1961 and 62, I'm going to date us, Joe, when Joe was an undergraduate, he studied college French, which he adored, in my classes. I was a graduate assistant in the French department at Miami. Time has passed, and Joe no longer studies French. But who would have thought that in 1985, and thinking back in the early 60s, I would be working with Joe on this particular program. I'd like now Joe to take over. Thank you.
I want to start where I was supposed to end with a couple announcements first, because I'm feeling so lousy I might not even be here by the time Meridell's finished. There are some books that are going to be available, not very many. There are some at the bookstore uptown at the Miami Co-op. There are some at the university bookstore. Some of our novels and collections of short stories. There are also some of these. I've got some tonight, and I'll have more for Monday if they get to me in time. I don't know if you're allowed to sell these things on campus, but if you're not, you can give me a $5 donation, and I will give you a book donation, and we can do it that way. Also to remind you that there is another talk by Meridell on Monday. It's coming Monday, same time, same place, and the title is The New Age of Solidarity. So you're, of course, all welcome to return and bring a friend, although I might have a hard time sitting down. Many people. So I'll start again, and this is with a quote that I adapted from a woman writer who used a word that Meridell hates, and that word is penetration. So I thought about how I could alter that word. So this is my adaptation of this quote. The political writer, then, is the ultimate optimist, believing people are capable of change, and using words as one way to try and allow the opening of the privatism of our lives. And for both of those reasons, I've been drawn to Meridell's work. This incredible optimism, which is based on things that we're not, I think, very familiar with, mainly this incredible faith in what is glibly called the people. And the opening of the privatism of our lives is another thing that's touched me very deeply when I first ran across the girl quite by accident, because that story is composed of other women's real stories that she, because she was a woman of letters, and they were mainly not literate, was able to form into what I think is one of the very finest contemporary American novels. It's probably the only novel that I know of, and I'm not an expert, but written by a woman alive that can threaten the male, I love this word, can threaten the male canon, very distinctive and a very telling word, but can threaten the male canon of American literature. I called it once an unknown classic, which is a contradiction in terms, But it will be a classic. There's no doubt about it, as long as our literature is not in doubt. But I wanted to mention just one other thing that I think these days, right now, this very day, is so important to me about Meridel and her work. I mean, we live in a time in which the language is almost totally corrupted by the media and by the politicians, especially. We know some of these examples. You know, we lived through Vietnam, in which we had to destroy the village in order to save it. But it's so much worse now. We live in a time when our vice president can call Marcos a great Democrat. And we live in a time when our president can call the Contras the moral equivalent to our founding fathers. And we all have to put up with this kind of misuse of language. But it's so refreshing for me to have the kind of contact that I've had, mainly through Meridel's books, that I don't have to put up with that. So that when she says something, there's no faked ambiguity just to make work appear complex, but it's the real expression of very complex ideas that have arisen through the work and through the voices that she's been able to capture and to print. There's one final quote, and then she's all yours, and you can find out for yourself. She has a quote in a talk that she gave a few years ago that says, "We need a more immediate feeling about what is happening to us." And I can't think of any other thing that we need more than that. An immediate feeling, a more immediate feeling about what is really happening to us. And I think her work helps to make that feeling as immediate as is possible through print. And that's about all I have to say. It's indeed an honor. I could praise the woman, but there's no need for that. She's her own praise, and your being here is your own praise. So, my friend Meridel LeSueur.
This is a great honor to me. I want to look at it not just as an entertainment, just someone who is here like a good steak that you're consuming, but I feel that this is, in our time, is very important to have more connections and more reality to our culture. And I've had a great experience here this week what I think is a growth from my time to muteness, to actually covering up culturally what is true, to actually using the language and writing not as a revelation or a communication or to bring us closer together, but writing in my time, especially the writing of women, was to cover, was to hide. Well, my grandmother was very disturbed when I was going to become a writer. She said, "I spent all my life trying to cover up what happened to me. Now you're going to tell it." And I said, "Well, I sure am, if I can find out what it is." Because women didn't tell. Women didn't talk. I mean, part of the women's oppression was this muteness, this silence, this not telling you, just even defending their oppression. In the 30s, for example, I tried to write for the women's magazines. Well, the women's magazine were holding up the stereotype of women. If you didn't write about the stereotype of a woman, you didn't get published. And also in books, literary, you'd be surprised how much your writing was controlled. What you wrote about was controlled by the patriarchal literary world. You couldn't write about certain things. So I'd like to feel today like I felt in these classes this week, and in being part of being an artist in residence and being a woman artist is especially moving to me. And I've learned a great deal and been inspired by the writing that I've heard. And I feel more than ever that there should be a relationship of time between the older people and the younger people, we have what I call the dismemberment of memory. In our culture, we dismember memory. I want to say now we should remember memory, because our survival actually depends now on finding out what was true, finding out of our grandmothers, what happened. What happened in the great democratic struggle in America? What happened? What happened to the images? Our survival actually depends upon that. So I would like to make a prayer or a little ceremony, which I'm going to ask you all to hum. It's said by a musician that if everyone started out with their own private hum, within a small time, they would have one universal global note, say nothing of the cosmos. They might be humming a note of the cosmos. I'm just going to ask you to hum while I make this prayer for our survival and for the reality of our life. All right? I am making a sacred word that all the people may behold it. We are passing with great power over the prairie. The light is upon our people, making the earth bright. We are crying for a vision. Behold us, that our people may live. Our people are generous, and this is our day. Your ancestors have all arrived. The past has arrived. Behold. Listen, all is established here. We are relatives. This planet Earth and all upon it turns into view. The Earth is in our hands. Let it fly, bird of earth and light. Let the bird of the earth fly, and all that moves will rejoice. Approach in a beautiful manner. Thanks, all the people are crying. And thanks, grandmother of the center of the earth. Thanks. Make a word that all our people may behold it. We are passing with great power over the prairie. The light is on our people, making the earth bright. Our people are generous, and this is our day. Our ancestors have all arrived. The past has arrived. Behold, listen. Well, we need that more prayers and ceremonials. One of our distressing things in our culture, I think, that we've allowed to develop is pessimism, melancholy, cynicism, no belief and no faith in ourselves or our future. There's been an erosion in our culture of the belief in the power of the people, belief in the power of transformation, belief in the social power of the democratic struggles that have created our time. I want to speak here as a woman writer, as a woman poet, but primarily I'm a woman. I never conceived of myself like many in our society, you know, I'm going to be a poet. I think a poet should be just part of being alive and just part of, like the Indian culture, if you write a good poem, you don't put your name on it. If you write a bad poem, you put your name on it. A good poem comes from the high spirit of the communal life of the people, and that's what I feel about being a poet. But being a woman poet, I'd just like to tell you a few things about some of you young women are living a marvelous time. Sometimes you don't appreciate the struggle. My mother, in 1918, chained herself to the White House gates for the vote with four other women. Imagine five women chained to the household gates to get the vote. When they had this big meeting of thousands of women in Washington, I thought of these five women. What did they have faith in? I mean, they knew we were coming on. They knew you were coming on. They must have had tremendous. They got some kind of a big anchor from a ship. Took them all day to just file them out. And there they were, five women. Well, I think that this is a struggle of women. I feel it's similar to the to now. This is the anniversary of the Holocaust, and I think the Jewish people do a wonderful thing of not allowing us to dismember what happened, to remember and never forget, because we have no future if we have sundered our past. Hitler said he wouldn't allow any history being told except four years before he came to power. If I was in power, I would allow no history to be told and no language to be spoken. First thing I would make. So I'd like to point out, I'm going to read some of my what I call women's poems. There are some women who say that's crazy, that there's no such thing as sex in poetry. Well, I don't know how to write except as a woman. My experience as a woman is different. One of the tragedies of our culture is that these experiences have been cut off racially. We have had black culture, Indian culture, women's culture, Chicana culture. Our culture has been very white and of a power establishment, if you look at it. And now a wonderful thing is happening. We have Nicaraguan culture. A book of Nicaraguan poetry has already been published after only 5 years of their freedom. See, to me, it's one of the greatest times, moments to live, because of this tremendous communication, this tremendous breaking of out of the muteness and women. Well, when I was an adolescent, a woman could be a wife and mother, a teacher, a nurse, or a prostitute. That was about your entire choice. I had two brothers who could be anything. But you couldn't be a teacher or a nurse unless you had some training. And we were very poor. We had none of that. So that was about what I had to look forward to. So women secretly did things then. They made quilts. And many women kept diaries. If their husbands or mothers found them, they would burn them up, probably. I kept a secret diary. I still have 140 notebooks that I've written in my life that probably are my letter to the world, which are notebooks. I suppose emerged from that secret feeling that I had to keep it secret. And you did. And I used to sit under the quilting frames. You know, women used to quilt and hope I'd hear something about women, especially about sex. I never could find a thing about that. So we had a real struggle. I knew my grandmother was mute. My grandmother would never tell what happened to her. There was no history of her. There was no history of the women in her family. I think I began to write, not to be a writer, but to be a witness to women's oppression. I began to write about what women felt and suffered. And the oppression before the First World War of women, half the women died in childbirth before Pasteur, and half the children died. I mean, it was very dangerous to be a woman. And I remember my youth going to many, many funerals where the mother and the child were buried together. I mean, they didn't find out about childbed fever until Pasteur. So and women never talked about it. Abortion. My mother was tried in 1916. If you gave out any information of contraceptive, it was 99 years in prison. And Margaret Sanger was trying to test that. My mother was tried, and the only reason she wasn't convicted is the woman, she had 14 children that she gave contraceptive information, and the woman refused to recognize her. So they sent the woman to prison for using it. And my mother had to take care of her 14 children. So I like to read I don't write anything except about women. I've been one for 85 years, and I'm sort of a specialist on that. I'd just like to say a few more words about women's poetry. In the 1920 to 30 and the First World War, culture was dominated by elitist culture. T.S. Eliot wrote The Wasteland was one of the great tragedies of my time in 1923. You wouldn't think in 1923 a poem could change the cultural or even the philosophical temper of a whole country. But The Wasteland was a suicidal, terrible document of life, and no hope, no all a wasteland. And people committed suicide. Young people of my generation committed suicide because of the First World War and the philosophy of complete death of the 19th century humanism, of belief in democracy, a democratic culture. This was especially true in the Middle West. If you could get away from the Middle West when I was 20, everyone tried to get to Europe or to New York. I went to Greenwich Village when I was 15. And I to get away from the terrible death of the Middle West. And I found in the Middle West, I stayed in a boarding house, and they were all from Iowa. And the other part of that is the terrible struggle to make an American culture and to make a woman culture. To make an American culture, you don't realize what a struggle it was to break away from the English culture. It was a real struggle to have an American culture, an American speech, an American art. The Ashcan School of Artists. Are you familiar with that? They broke away from the French, Cubists, and so on. They had to call it the Ashcan School of Artists. It was made fun of them because Stieglitz took pictures of alleys and the ghetto and Georgia O'Keeffe. And Bellows and Henry, was a whole school who said, let's just paint America. What's American? Even people changed. So this was a real struggle to find out what is American when you're bound to a mother country like that. So there weren't many women poets in my time. I never knew even a women writer. In 1923, Zona Gale, none of you ever heard of her, I don't imagine, won the Pulitzer Prize, the first woman to win the Pulitzer Prize. I can't think who won it after that. There must have been some other women who won the Pulitzer Prize. But she's forgotten. Her books are out of print. I have the names of 20 forgotten, lost Midwest women writers that I think are as good and first-rate as any of the male writers. And they are lost, forgotten. Their books are out of print. There's no critique of them. Even the women's studies now is just beginning to reprint and to understand what these women had, because they were giving a picture of a different reality than the women's home companion or the women writers in the establishment. I'm going to begin by reading my poem to our grandmothers. I think we should all, if you have any grandmothers, be sure you take down their history. I mean, get a tape. Don't wait, because they don't linger here forever. Get a tape recorder, because it's very important. And now at last they will talk. Women wouldn't talk for a long time, but now you can't stop them. Hush, my little grandmother. I'm a woman come to speak for you. I'm a woman speaking for us all, from the tongue of dust and fire, from the bowl of bitter smoke. This is a song for strength and power. Everything is coming out now, pouring in bloom of day. Let us all go down and bathe in the water. The water is coming on the four paths of the eagles. Let us all of many colors go down where the waters come, calling, calling to us in rivers of wind and blood. We are glut of a strong thrust, grandmother. Hush, my little root. My empty pod. Hush, hush, my little grandmother. I am a woman come to speak in tongues of dust and fire, woman bold and filled with pollen. This is another woman. Run, run, come, come. I am horizon that runs from your central breast, curve you in embrace. Central where you lift the skull and tree and the blood on sacrificial grass. In my white robe I rise from all massacres. I am the heat. I am your brave heart. I am the scalp in your hand. I am the severed arm speaking the amputated limbs, the frozen mothers, the babes drinking at the frozen breasts. I am rising from the bloody carnage. I am the ghost of Blunt Knife's band going north. I am Black Hawk's song. I am a woman warm in the herbage of your embrace. I was your child beside your thigh. I am your sister beside you, bone and sinew, skin and skull, running from the tide of gunshot. Run, run. Come, come, for my sake, let us arrive together. Dig me from the cougar dust, for I lie waiting you in fire and thorn. From my feet burst the prairie grasses. Do not withhold your strength or your power. Let your blood bloom. Run, run. Come, come, the same enemy pursues us. The same mother guards us. Run, run into my flowering prairie. Run, run. This is a poem to the wounded knee, called Dead in Bloody Snow, the first wounded knee. People ask me why I write poems from an Indian women. I think one of the great things that's happening now is a breakdown. There's been a great struggle between the white women's movement and the black women's movement, for example, and the Indian women's movement. Racism, women racism has been a worm that's been defiling some of the women's relationships. And I think it's very important that we identify ourselves with the women's struggles, all women's struggles. I'm going to tell you something here. I'm going to spend my bearing money. And we always used to have our bearing money, but you didn't have insurance and all that. You may not have it now when you get. And it's very expensive to die. You can hardly afford it. And I'm going to take all the money I've saved up. I'm going to the International Women's Meeting in July in Africa. I want to see all these women from all over the world in their different. I want to see them for my mother who tied herself to the gate. I want to see the what they feel and do. And well, just swim amongst them, maybe. So I'm really very, very excited. In Arabia, it's going to be in the. So I think a time is coming, and this is very interesting. Why the breakdown of racism is because 80% of the goods of the world is going to be created and produced by colonial women in colonial countries at 50 cents a day. Sears is producing their garments in Korea from women's sweatshops. It's a world sweatshop, and the international women's meetings have addressed that. In fact, in the one in Copenhagen, they said that in a few years there would be an international women's union, because they have the same companies dominating them. And I wish my mother could hear it would be a necessity. Not just something that developed, because these women, and they come to this meeting, they came to the Copenhagen meeting, the women who work in the sweatshop. In Minneapolis, there are Korean women, Vietnamese women, work right up in the warehouses in Minneapolis, in sweatshops. You know, we had a tremendous struggle to do away with sweatshops since 1908, when the Great Fire burned the women. There's been a tremendous an organization of the two great women's unions, the International Garment Workers, and that they're being destroyed. Well, this is a feeling that I have that we are coming now to struggle. We must struggle together as women. I am an Indian woman, witness to my earth, witness for my people. I am the nocturnal door, the hidden cave of your sorrow. Like you, hidden deep in furrow and dung of the charnel mound, I heard the craving passing of the white soldiers and saw them shoot at wounded knee upon the sleeping village and ran with the guns at my back until we froze in our blood on the snow. I speak from old portages where they pursued and shot into the river crossing all the grandmothers of Black Hawk. I speak from the smoke of grief, from the broken stone, and cry, with the women crying from the marsh, trail and tears of drowsed women. O bitter barren, O barren bitter, I run homeless. I arrive in the gunsight beside the white square houses of abundance. My people starve all the time of the bitter moon. I hear my ghostly people crying, rising from our dusty dead, the sweet grass, the skull, marking the place of loss and flight. I sing, holding my severed head to my dismembered child, a people's dream that died in bloody snow. This is about an Indian prostitute in Gallup. Lost mother load. I'm hitchhiking with wolves, ahead of the border snatchers. Get a dark girl to change your luck. 2 bits is enough for an Indian. Watch out for the white cop. Wherever you go, they are upon you, stretched over you, throw you from a car when they're done. The plantation boys standing around.